After a broil over flagging political content on Twitter and Facebook, tech companies are being called on the carpet for their policies on rooting out misinformation.
A big question is, even with all these policies, are they enforcing them in a consistent way? And are they taking things down or labeling them or doing whatever they need to do in a fast enough manner so that misinformation or disinformation doesn't spread in the hour or 2 hours or 3 hours that it's up before action is taken?
Plus, President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden prepare for dueling town halls. And investors go crazy over K-pop. It's Thursday, October 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. New applications for unemployment benefits rose last week to 898,000. That's the highest level since late August, and it follows steady declines from a peak of nearly 7 million in March. Claims have been coming in between 800,000 and 900,000 for more than a month, indicating the economic recovery is slowing. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the Trump administration will agree to Democrats' demands for a national coronavirus testing strategy as part of the next round of stimulus. Mnuchin made those comments in an interview with CNBC today. Democrats still have concerns about the White House's nearly $1.9 trillion proposal, but a deal over a national testing plan clears a major hurdle as they seek to negotiate a relief bill ahead of the election. The Senate Judiciary Committee is set to vote next week on Judge Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to the Supreme Court. Democrats on the committee protested the move today, accusing Republicans of trying to force her confirmation through ahead of the election. California Senator Dianne Feinstein is the top Democrat on the committee.
As far as I know, this is being done without any precedent in the time, at least, I've been on this committee, which is about 25 years. And it's being done, I guess, to show power and push someone through and really abrogate the value of hearings that this committee should treasure and respect.
Republicans hold a 53-47 majority in the Senate, leaving little doubt as to the final outcome. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden are preparing to hold competing town halls tonight. NBC News is facing pushback from employees over its decision to air Trump's town hall at the same time as Biden's event, which will run on ABC. Critics say the decision forces viewers to choose between which candidate to watch. In other campaign news, Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris has suspended travel through this weekend after her communications director and a non-staff flight crew member tested positive for the coronavirus. The Biden campaign said Harris wasn't in close contact with either individual during the 2 days prior to the positive tests and that it suspended travel out of an abundance of caution. Morgan Stanley, the latest big bank to report earnings this week, saw its quarterly profit rise 25% in the third quarter from a year earlier. Overall, big banks each posted billions of dollars in profits. Three, including Morgan Stanley, saw an increase in profits from a year ago, despite the recession. The banks that rely more heavily on consumer banking saw their profits decline. And the lights may be out on Broadway, but that's not stopping the Tony Awards. The musical Jagged Little Pill, featuring songs from Alanis Morissette's 1995 hit album, earned 15 nominations, the most for any musical. Moulin Rouge, the musical, based on the 2001 Baz Luhrmann film, was a close follow with 14 nods. Fewer shows were eligible for awards this year because of the pandemic, just 18 compared to more than 30 last year. The Tonys haven't announced a date yet for the awards ceremony. Coming up after the break, the challenges of moderating political content on social media. Big tech is once again drawing scrutiny from Washington. On Wednesday, Twitter and Facebook took steps to limit the distribution of New York Post articles that made new allegations about Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden that the Biden campaign denied. The Post said the articles were based on email exchanges with Hunter Biden, the Democratic candidate's son, that were provided by allies of President Trump. The emails described a meeting between Joe Biden and an executive at the Ukrainian energy firm Burisma, on whose board Hunter Biden served. The Wall Street Journal hasn't independently verified the Post articles. The Journal and the Post are both owned by News Corp. Facebook flagged the content for its third-party fact-checkers to review. Twitter blocked users from posting links to the articles. Twitter first said they potentially violated its rules regarding hacked materials. The company later said the articles also violated its policies on displaying private information, like email addresses and phone numbers, without a person's permission. The move spawned a swift reaction from Republicans in Washington. Today, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee said it would subpoena Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey to testify. Dorsey has called the company's failure to give context around its actions unacceptable. But this is part of a bigger conversation around how social media companies are trying to moderate content on their platforms ahead of the election. A Wall Street Journal test has found that new rules Facebook created to improve discourse on its platform aren't being consistently enforced. Joining me now to talk more about all of this is our tech and politics reporter, Emily Glazer. Hi, Emily. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Emily, the role of tech companies in moderating content posted to their platforms is back in the spotlight this week. What's the latest you can tell us about the challenges they face in trying to figure out this responsibility?
It seems tech platforms can't get out of the spotlight lately when we're talking about, you know, political content, political ads. Basically, what has been happening is that there is a lot of user content that are posted on these platforms or posted in ads, and tech platforms, especially Facebook and Twitter, sometimes Google as well, are trying to catch up with the different ways that people are sharing content. And when it's political, it adds a whole other realm of issues, potential problems. And unfortunately, it seems like the tech platform's policies haven't cut it, or people find loopholes around it, or they don't enforce them consistently, or they don't enforce them at all. So there are a whole slew of ways that tech platforms find themselves still dealing with political content, whether it is organic and posted by the user or advertising.
It can seem like a bit of an identity crisis, and something we've reported on extensively, that is the role of tech companies here and whether they're going to be operating as publishers or platforms or some kind of in between here.
It's a great question. We've seen now with, you know, Twitter limiting the ability to retweet ahead of the election, Facebook has slowed down the distribution of certain articles that are on its platform. I think they're recognizing that they are part publisher and sometimes are now limiting what can be published, but at the same time, they're both still social networks, and people will inherently like and share and engage with different posts, and it makes it much more difficult to just turn that off completely. Even if they try to reduce the distribution of something that's being shared, it still already was shared before then and will be shared after. So it really raises the question of, are there policies applicable to what's going on? And if they're making new policies, are they changing them in time with only weeks to go for the election?
Right. Hard to overstate the importance of these platforms in an election year. We know many people are getting their news and interacting and talking about the elections on these platforms. Tell us about some of the things tech companies are doing specifically to address concerns in an election year.
Sure. I hope I remember all of them because it changes nearly every day, it seems. So I'll start with a few weeks ago, Facebook rolled out a new policy where it wouldn't accept any new political ads in the week leading up to the election. Soon after that, it decided that it wouldn't accept any new political ads after Election Day. That was something that Google had also announced. And Twitter banned most political ads more than a year ago. So that's where things are on the advertising front. What we've seen in more recent weeks are tweaks and updates to the platform's policies as it relates to user content and what can be either labeled or removed. What we saw just recently now from both Facebook and Twitter is that if a presidential candidate or a candidate is calling, saying that they won the election on their platforms before the race has actually been called, that is something that they will label. If there is any, Facebook used the term militarized language, especially, you know, intimidation around a polling place, that is something that they will label. So now they're starting to get very specific about hypotheticals that could occur that could either drive voter suppression, violence at the polls, or other issues that they are trying to tamp down on in a more detailed manner.
We talked a little bit earlier about the challenges of taking on this role. What are some of the things you've heard from these companies about that?
I think they're acknowledging this is really hard. I mean, we just saw Jack Dorsey tweet and acknowledge that Twitter didn't explain its policy specifically enough when it decided to slow the distribution of a New York Post article. So we're even seeing CEOs publicly say, we need to work on our response. Mark Zuckerberg has made a number of, you know, Facebook posts and other public comments and interviews about how unprecedented this election is and how they're trying to do what they can. And certainly what we hear from our sources is that it is extremely difficult. They're constantly, you know, trying to keep up. But I will say a lot of critics are saying, look, these companies are huge. And, you know, have they put enough resources into it? Are they doing enough? Does the AI work? What about the human aspect of it? And at the end of the day, a big question is, even with all these policies, are they enforcing them in a consistent way? And are they taking things down or labeling them or doing whatever they need to do in a fast enough manner so that misinformation or disinformation doesn't spread in the hour or 2 hours or 3 hours that it's up before action is taken?
Wall Street Journal tech and politics reporter Emily Glazer. Emily, thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to do it.
And finally, investors are learning what Gen Zers have known for a while. Korean pop music, known as K-pop, is big. Shares of Big Hit Entertainment, the company that manages the K-pop boy band BTS, nearly doubled after its trading debut today. Initially priced at around $118, shares jumped 91%, bringing the company's value to about $8 billion. Francis Yoon, our reporter in Hong Kong, says there's a global buzz for K-pop culture, but Big Hit faces some vulnerabilities.
There are concerns because there was initially some reservations from investors for the BTS IPO. They thought it was a bit too expensive. And there are some other signals that people need to consider. So, for example, BTS makes about nearly 88% of all of its revenue. So it makes it more vulnerable should the band fall from favor. The seven members of the BTS band also have to comply to a mandatory rule in South Korea where all South Korean men have to go to the military for 18 months. So that could also disrupt the activity of BTS. And thirdly, there are political tensions between China and South Korea, and there was a recent remark made by one of the BTS members about the Korean War that angered some commentators in China. So, and China is a huge market for BTS and for a lot of the South Korean pop sensations.
But it's not just China. Last month, BTS became the first all-Korean band to top Billboard's Hot 100 chart with their first English-language single, Dynamite. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.